listened to every single podcast on oneofus.net. What do I do now?
Well, first of all, how is that even possible? But secondly, I think I have a solution for you, Chris.
There can be no solution, Brian.
There is a solution, and that solution is our newest sponsor, Audible.com. Guys, if you haven't tried Audible.com, now is the perfect time to do that. We're talking about content that includes over 150,000 audio programs. We're talking about books on digital, audio dramas, broadcasters, magazine and newspaper publishers, all the greatest stuff you can possibly imagine in one place just for you.
Okay, that actually does sound pretty good.
Doesn't that sound great? And you know what? I'm going to make it sound even greater, Chris, because they are officially, Audible is officially one of our sponsors here at oneofus.net, and as a special gift to you guys, Audible is giving away a free audiobook. All you have to do is click on the link at the bottom of this page, or you can go to audibletrial.com/oneofus.
You mean to say that by clicking on audible.com and downloading their free book, they make sure by listening to that audio that we keep making more audio as well?
That's right, and the cycle continues.
Hey, Casey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
You know, you're no longer tethered to college, thus making our entire identity as a podcast obsolete.
I'm not in college anymore?
No, you've actually been saying that a lot on your Facebook feed for the last week and a half.
I was joking, man.
Why would you joke about something so serious? I had a poster made with your face photoshopped on Dustin Hoffman's from Rain Man. It's like from Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. But
hello, darkness, my old friend.
But I grabbed my guitar here. You know, I wanted to strum it a bit to kind of get you back into the mood of being at college and stuff, and walking down Turner Bridge where all the douchebags are strumming their guitars, trying to court ladies or men. You know, nothing wrong with that. So anyway, does it bring you back, you know, to the days of old, Casey?
You're gonna bring me back?
I'll bring you back. Yeah. Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire...
And welcome back to, and I say this with as many quotation marks as possible, Geeks at College.
Like 18 quote marks. Yes.
You know, we were a little short-sighted when we came up with that title.
Well, we never thought we'd make it this far, in a way.
Back then we were thinking, like, oh, this would probably get retired once Fish graduates.
Not even when Fish graduates, but just, like, well, we weren't sure when I graduated, you know, if we were just ended or whatever, you know. Hey, we ran longer than Firefly did, you know.
Well, dude, I'm pretty sure that this episode will run longer than Firefly did.
That's probably true. Or fucking Dark Knight Rises Spectacular. It's 5 hours long.
That episode was... Oh, my God. And then let's never speak of that again.
Well, in that whole episode, the only real reason it's that long is because we couldn't watch it, you know, be in a room together and talk about it. So we had to kind of... Yeah. Diversify in a way.
No,
so,
we divvied it up, and then once we divvied it up, we still went, each segment went as long as an episode itself.
Yeah.
So.
But hey, that was on Lounge Geeks, where you could listen to one half at a time. So it's like one day, yeah. And then you can listen to it the other day.
Yeah, so we went that long, we've said that we've done it, now let's never speak of it again.
I'm always going to bring it up, because that's a record for us. Hey man, I had to edit all that shit together. I'm gonna fucking talk about it. But
that was my Vietnam, and I was in Korea.
Okay. South Korea, where it's pretty nice. Not North Korea.
No, I've been watching MASH lately, so I've been thinking of the Korean War.
The movie on nonstop or the show?
No, the show that ran longer than the actual war. I'd actually never seen MASH
really?
Until this year.
Yeah, MASH was one of those things that I figured you'd probably be like would want to watch, since it's one of the most important shows ever, kind of.
If you had to name two important shows, they would be The Sopranos and MASH, pretty much.
Pretty much, I guess. Well, there's other ones, too.
Well, there's obviously other ones, but you just had to say, like, okay, two TV shows that were most important and influential in how TV went all across the board. It's The Sopranos and MASH. The MASH Sopranos.
Yeah. I guess from a TV standpoint.
If I ever open up a restaurant, there will be a special called Sopranos and MASH. It's just going to be mashed potatoes, and I'm not sure what else.
And you'll have, like, a picture of Alan Arkin.
Alan Alda.
Alan Alda. And Alan Arkin. You know, whatever. You're both of them. Or you can have Donald Sutherland, since he was in the movie. But it's a picture of him from, like, Animal House. So it doesn't even... It's not even relevant, really. But anyway, just like we're the podcast, the little podcast that could and has defied all expectations by lasting longer than a month, we're going to talk about a show to start that has defied expectations, right?
It has done literally the exact opposite of everything we ever expected to do.
Okay. And what show is that?
Well, go on. Had you told me... Because in case it's not clear from the name of the episode or anything else, we're talking about Community. And if somebody told me 3 years ago that after I graduated from college, we would still be getting new episodes of Community, I would have been like, boy, you cray.
You crazy. Yeah.
Because that's how I talked 3 years ago.
Remember, it's like, remember back, I think it was like, it was our first bit of recording the show, actually, when season 3, you know, was in trouble.
Yeah, well, I think that we were all certain that the show was going to get canceled around then.
Pretty much. And yeah, here we are.
It is quite literally, the little engine that could would be like, dude, I can't believe you did that.
Even though it'd be like...
Like, Neil Armstrong could say, like, yeah, I walked on the moon, but at the same time, they...
Neil Armstrong's dead. Oh. A downer.
Yeah, but same.
Anyway, go ahead.
Either way, Community Season 6, available on Yahoo Screens.
Yeah.
Is. I cannot believe. Like, I'm obviously very clearly in amazement that Community Season 6 is a thing, and it's okay.
It's pretty solid. We're going to review, as of now, after this recording, the first 3 episodes that have been out. It starts with the boldly titled Ladders, which I'm glad that they're bringing that back. What was that? Was that season 3 or was that season 4? Like,
it was season 3's clip show.
Yeah.
And it's just a guy who goes, welcome to Ladders.
One of the best jokes in the show, if you ask me.
No, just an amazing cutaway in one shot with 3 lines.
Oh, man. But, yeah, Ladders, and you kind of have this new status quo. I think Ladders gets a little... I think if I had anything to really criticize it for, it does get a little too, like, self-referential. Like, even for this show, you know, at times... Where it's like, oh man, like all the, you know, it's basically like, it's like they had all this stuff for Abed to say and they had to get it out in the first episode because he mellows out in the other two.
It's a lot of self-referential. It's a lot of callbacks, and of their season premieres, this is not one of the strongest, but I'm not sure I'd go as far as say it's the weakest.
Oh, no.
It's them dealing with a transition. And yeah. I think, and like when they had to deal with one in season three, and even, or not season three, season four, but even to an extent season three and season five, they could have handled transition a little bit better, but still came in strong.
It's like the fourth episode where they've had to deal with change as like a theme. And there's some funny bits. Like, I really enjoyed the montage jokes, like when Abed's, you know, he's working with emails.
Yeah, well, one thing, my favorite thing is that everyone else was trying to be really elaborate, and Abed was the one who's just like, you know, this might not be that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's actually doing a genuine reversal of what you would expect, and I was really happy to see that they were doing something notably different.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's going to be a running thing this season, is that, yeah, we're still community, but we're going to be a little bit different.
Obviously. And that's honestly been every season since season three, pretty much.
Yeah, because then they did that with season four and people hated it. And then they're doing the exact same thing this season, but Dan Harmon's name is attached to it. So therefore, even if it's objectively worse, people will love it more.
Even though it's probably not objectively worse than season four.
Oh yeah, no, it is better. Season four is still the weakest season. But you and I are on the same page.
Oh yeah, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast. But we're one of like we might be the only two people in the world that actually thinks season four of Community is not the worst thing that it's ever graced this planet.
I know Chris actually likes it a little more than season three.
Well, there are things that season four does better than season three, i.e. Britta, yeah. You know, and that leads into another thing where, how do you feel about season six Britta so far?
I like the one that where she deals with her parents. Every other one, I feel like they made her too much of a joke. Like
Which was the problem with season three.
Yeah. Like, I'm starting to wonder if Gillian Jacobs has, like, pissed off Dan Harmon.
Yeah, like some passive-aggressive bullshit.
Because at this point, like, they cannot give her even a little bit of dignity. They literally opened up an episode where her first scene, she craps herself.
Yeah, in episode three.
Episode three, like, her first scene is, okay, she's wide awake. It's like, oh, that makes sense. She's a bartender. So it makes sense that she would be wide awake. That's a nice little change, give her a little bit more dignity. Then they go like, oh, she's drunk. It's like, but a bartender doesn't automatically lead to you're drunk, guys.
Yeah, and she does her...
In fact, I would rather them not be drunk, I dare say.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tries to do a little routine and immediately craps her pants, which is the most, like, demeaning thing that they've done to Britta possibly ever.
Possibly ever.
And that's saying a lot, because she's become the show's... She became the show's punching bag in season two.
Well, and season three was where it really, you know, kind of came to a head, you know.
Yeah, it got out of hand.
It was just, I mean, it's like, she was like a different character than she was in seasons one and two. And also, I should say that the third season's DVD cover sucks ass compared to the other ones.
That's the one where she's just on a notebook, right?
That's the one where, like, they're like, they have stick bodies. Like, they're doodles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like season four, they're in lockers, but they're bobbleheads. Season five,
they're behind a bookshelf.
Yeah. So, yeah. Holy shit, it's weird seeing John Oliver on the cover now, knowing last week tonight. But...
Well, it's not like that, but remember when Jonathan Banks was in the show?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Everyone was on this show.
Well, I think that's becoming a thing now. For every new season of Community, they have to bring in two characters who are a prominent role and then will never be seen again.
Well, that was a running gag from the first season where you brought in, they would take a different class and each class would have a different teacher. It's like Chang was the first one, and then you had Betty White too.
What I'm saying is prominent role. And Chang has still had a somewhat prominent role for the entirety of the run. He has never disappeared entirely.
No.
Or, whereas, say, look at season five, you suddenly had Jonathan Banks in there to replace Pierce, and then he left. and was never been seen again, or John Oliver was there for the first couple seasons and then mysteriously disappeared until season five because he was, I think he was in New York filming The Daily Show some more.
Well, and let's not forget Michael K. Williams in season three.
Oh, yeah. Well, that one, at least they gave an explanation for why we never saw him again.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, we're talking about...
But just how quickly both him and John Goodman, for that matter, just, both left the show.
Well, John Goodman's character died.
Yeah, he died, but he died off screen, and you just see a really big body bag. It's like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah, was that season three?
That was season three.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Season three and four are a lot closer than I think people give season four credit for.
I think that the high points of season three are stronger than the high points of season four.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people remember, but they're forgetting the episodes that really, really don't work. Like, say, the episode where with all of these celebrity impersonators, that episode gets a little weird and a little hokey. The foosball episode has a really great scene at the end. And actually, I'm going to stop right there because the foosball episode, the more I think about it, is amazing. But
between Shirley and Jeff? Yeah.
Yeah, like that episode's a legitimately great episode. But the other half of that was Abed dressed up like Batman, and that ran its joke into the ground really fucking quickly.
Yeah, that was the whole B plot, which was just a really stupid B plot.
Like, and on paper, it's an amazing idea for a B plot. It just did not translate well at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to go down the list of episodes, you would go like, oh, the one where they help Annie move, that one doesn't work nearly as well. Or the one where, going down the list, documentary filmmaker and ducks, regional holiday music, contemporary impressionists didn't work very well, urban matrimony and sandwich arts was kind of blah.
And yet it has almost 5 million viewers.
Well, that was when they were coming back. It's like, we need people to watch this show.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, but we're not here to talk about seasons three. We're here to talk about season six, which was pretty good.
I will say, I think the second episode is my favorite so far.
Second episode was the one with Britta's parents, right?
Yes. Lawnmower Maintenance. And which I was like, that's a weird title. And then I realized that they were doing a Lawnmower Man parody, and it's like, this is amazing.
I didn't even realize they were doing a Lawnmower Man parody.
Yeah, dude, that's the whole thing.
I've never seen Lawnmower Man.
Well, just know that Lawnmower Man is one of those. That's what Jeff was making fun of when he said, when he made the kind of umbrella statement about, you know, 90s movies and virtual reality. Lawnmower Man started it because it's about this simple man who gets intelligence by getting hooked up to the internet, and Pierce Brosnan's in it before he was James Bond. And
isn't it adapted from a Stephen King book but has literally nothing to do with it?
It has literally nothing to do with it, but they still put his name on it. And it's absolutely ridiculous, Lawnmower Man is. But when I saw when I saw where they were going and I looked at the title, I thought, this is going to be awesome. And it was awesome. I thought Jim Rash was great. It was cool that they had Keith David in it.
And Keith David's apparently a season regular.
Yeah, he's a season regular, I guess. Him and Padgett Brewster. And I like Padgett Brewster in this, too, as Frankie, who's like their new consultant to help Greendale.
I like that they're not just making her new Shirley. Like, I was genuinely concerned about it. Part of me was actually thinking they were going to flat out name her Shirley just to make a joke about it.
Speaking of Yvette Nicole Brown, I loved her little, like, stinger.
I adored that singer. She literally spun off
Butcher and the Baker. I would watch it.
This fall on NBC.
I think at least every episode has at least, like, one big set piece that made me laugh out loud, which is obviously good. That's what you want. You know, Ladders, you had, one, Butcher and the Baker.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. I even like the whole, like, why they brought back Ladders. and they brought back the same teacher, too, from that scene. And then falls on Annie and she sprains her neck. So.
And then Nathan Fillion for one shot.
And Nathan Fillion for one shot. They have, like, the... Well, I guess it was just a straight-up speakeasy. Like, it wasn't any sort of special... Oh, the beginning of Ladders with Leonard. With the Frisbees. That was when I said to myself, all right, welcome back, Community. Because that's such a brilliant little joke, because it's fucking college. And of course there's going to be hundreds of Frisbees on the roof that are going to weigh down the roof and make it collapse. Because college.
And then when they're able to bring that back with... Guys, that roof is going to fall no matter what. There was mostly styrofoam in the rubble.
And then lawnmower maintenance, you had basically any scene with Jim Rash with the dean going through virtual reality was amazing. They set up this contraption. What's that?
Did you realize that Jim Rash directed that episode?
Yeah, I did. I saw that. And just... Like, because I was curious how they would do the virtual reality part, and I think because it's so low res, it nails it, because that's what Lawnmower Man looked like. It looked like garbage because it was 1991 or something. So it was kind of beautiful. And then you have basic crisis room decorum, just anything involving ruffles in that episode is amazing. And I like to think that it's definitely a... kind of hit on like the newsroom, because it reminded me of the newsroom a bit.
It reminded me of the newsroom quite a bit, and I was okay with that.
Oh, I was okay with it too, because that show's stupid.
Mm-hmm. This one also gave me one of my favorite lines. Did we give a degree to a dog? And there's actually, and just watching Jim Rash's face when he has to think about this.
And then in the actual ad they go with, it's like, we gave a degree to a dog. Greendale needs to get our shit together. But if you come here, and then I love their slogan is, you're already accepted.
Well, that's been their slogan since season one.
Oh, well, whatever. You're already accepted.
Yeah, like in the, because when I was at the wedding last week, fun fact or about, I went to a wedding, but... I was in the back room with a lot of the groomsmen, and we actually watched the paintball episodes, and there's a really brilliant part where the faux stormtroopers are looking around like, welcome to Greendale, you're already accepted, God, what a joke, and through the poster, Ovid paint and Annie shoot them, and they go, welcome to Greendale, you're already accepted.
Yeah.
Things you do with groomsmen before a wedding. Yep. Watch Community.
But...
Put on tuxes and watch Community. Oh my god, I just realized how weird that moment was.
So what's your favorite episode of the three so far?
I really liked Basic Crisis Room Decorum quite a bit. I think that each character, with the exception of Britta, was given a really good chance to shine. Mm-hmm. I think that they did a good job giving character motivations on a show that sometimes will get, say, Jeff's motivations lost, and he just seems to be doing it because the plot needs him to do it. Yeah. And I also thought, beyond all that, it was really funny. I think that they did a really great job with Ruffles.
I like 27 children from 5 different fathers.
And I like the stuff with Abed and the James Spader impersonator, that tiny beat right there. I thought that worked really well. I think that was actually one of the best episodes they've had since probably the beginning of season 5. Because that's always my thing with that season, is it starts off so strong, but as the season goes on, it starts to peter out. Yeah. And this season starts off stronger than season 5 ended, and I'm hoping it doesn't peter out. And something just occurred to me. Holy shit. What was the name of the cameraman from Groundhog Day who showed up at the end of season 5?
I don't remember.
That guy. We'll find out later. But when they bring him back, they go, and he's going to be here for a while. No, apparently not. Or when they gave Chang a job on school board. No, apparently not. Like, all these setups at the end of that season were for nothing.
Are you talking about Chris Elliott?
Yeah, Chris Elliott.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot that he was a cameraman in Groundhog Day.
And yet he was.
And yet he was.
And yet he was also in season 5 Community. And they said, and he's going to be sticking around to watch over us in season 6. Nah.
It Community hasn't been the greatest with continuity, even though they've dealt with several episodes that deal with continuity.
They're great with continuity, except when it comes to having actors stick around for a while. So yeah. I have a feeling that somebody, either there's some hard ass with the contracts, or somebody in the high ups of Community might be hard to deal with.
Probably.
Maybe.
Maybe Dan Harmon. I mean, it's pretty well known how much of a douche Dan Harmon can be. So
I'm not gonna say it because, you know, I'm graduating now and hope not to burn bridges before I cross them. But yeah, maybe Stan Garman.
Wow, Casey, throwing him under the bus. I see.
Look, I'm always saying Stan Garman is the biggest asshole on the planet. If I could punch his children in the face and retroactively have that punch hurt him, I would.
You get an email from him in your inbox.
Like, there's actually genuinely a guy out there listening to us named Stan Garman. And he's like, you know, my child is in a wheelchair.
Child died in the Hindenburg disaster.
And then suddenly Casey feels like the biggest douche in the universe. Part 7.
Part 7. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I still say that probably Lawnmower Maintenance is my favorite, personally. Just because, I don't know, I just enjoyed seeing Jim Rash run around that stupid contraption. And just knowing Lawnmower Man and
Jim
seeing
Rash
him. What's that?
Jim Rash doesn't chew scenery. Jim Rash swallows scenery, throws it back up again, and lets it pour out over the stage and screen.
Okay.
Was that too dark a metaphor? Okay.
It's all good. But yeah, so Community's six season. I was talking to Casey before we recorded how bizarre it is to say that Community's in its sixth season. Especially when its motto is 6 seasons in a movie.
Community has lasted 6 seasons. It is it's a little show that could.
It is a little show that could.
Depending on how it does on Yahoo, it might get a 7th.
Yeah.
If Community outlives 6 seasons in a movie, holy shit.
Then the universe just collapses on itself.
It's clear that God clearly just came back from taking a giant dump. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because I feel like Yahoo, unlike NBC, just really has faith in the show and knows what the show is. It's kind of like Netflix with Arrested Development, even though we've talked about how we feel that, like, season 4 isn't quite as good as previous seasons. Which you could almost chalk up Arrested Development season 1 through 3 as just, you know, success through adversity in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Versus being given everything, given the world and a bunch of freedom, and then you kind of go wild with it. And I don't think that's the case necessarily here with Yahoo, but you can definitely tell that the people at Yahoo who are helping with the show, like, actually give a shit about it. Which,
okay, I'm just saying that I'm reading through some stuff they're apparently planning to do. Apparently Steve Guttenberg is going to be in an episode, as is Billy Zane.
Mm-hmm.
Subway, the boyfriend that Britta had in, like, season 3,
is going to be in an episode. In that kind of okay episode. That parodies 1984.
That parodies 1984 for a scene and then does something completely different from 1984 for the rest of it.
Yeah, Billy Zane's going to be in it.
Yeah, Billy Zane, a mysterious, nameless man scouting Britta for unique talent.
Yeah, Martin Mull played Britta's dad. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and as we talked about before, we got a mic, Matt Berry.
Matt fucking Berry. And if you don't know who Matt Berry is, you look up who Matt Berry is. Because he is awesome.
If you don't know who Matt Berry is, look up Douglas Introduction from the IT Crowd.
Or, yeah.
Because that is my favorite introduction of a character in television.
Or just watch the last episode of season 1 of the IT Crowd and build up to that scene. and then watch every episode afterwards.
Dude, remember when I was watching for the first time, and I was like, oh, God, their boss just jumped out the window. Oh, I love their boss. And you just messaged me back, no, just wait. Oh, my God.
And I was right, wasn't I?
Yes. Within 80 seconds, you got a perfect sense of who Douglas Reynolds is, and it's amazing.
Yeah. And other things, he was in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is a fucking fantastic... Super underrated show. That's hilarious. And if you like the IT Crowd and haven't watched Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, then go fucking watch it. He was also in... I know he's also been on stuff like... he was on Portlandia, for one. And he was great in his little guest spot on that. So... And he's got an amazing voice. So... Yeah.
I'm Garth Marenghi.
Well, he's not Garth Marenghi.
I know he didn't play him, but still.
Guy who does Garth Marenghi is pretty awesome, though. Richard Iode. You watch yourself, I'll give you a knuckle supper.
There's nothing in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place that isn't amazing. That's legitimately one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Also, One Track Lover on it. Or what? One Track Lover. Is that what it is? Or is it a one-way lover on a two-way?
Actually, I'll be honest. There's one episode of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place I have not seen because I don't want it to be done.
Well, it's a British show.
Remember how on Lost Desmond read every single thing Charles Dickens ever read except for one thing because he wants that to be the last thing he reads before he dies?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I am with Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
You'll be on your deathbed.
Yep. Please, Nancy. Please play Garth Marenghi's Dark Place Season 1, Episode 5. But it just got revived, and now there's 300 episodes.
No!
I wasted my life.
This is Casey at 27, because he wants to join the 27 Club.
Come now. 29.
29. Oh, you don't want to join the 27 Club?
No, that's Chris's job.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not that he necessarily wants to, but it's just kind of inevitable. Yeah. you're like, that's like your goal. At least it was. I guess it's changed now that you're not in college anymore.
Yeah. Actually, I love that our circle of friends have been making more 27 Club jokes in the last year or so because we're all gradually hitting 20 or getting closer to 27.
Which is also an inevitability. So.
Except for Chris.
What's he talking to Neil about? He's like, I'm 25. And I'm like, dude, 25 is fucking awesome. I'm like, you're 25. And he's like, but it's halfway to 30. I'm like, pfft.
And 30 is a third of the way to 100. It's nothing.
Dan Avidan from Game Grumps is fucking 35. He's in a band called Ninja Sex Party. And is known by millions as Danny Sexbang. 35.
He's 35?
Yeah.
That fucker's old.
Yeah, but it's that Jewish youth blood in him.
Oh, Jewth.
Jewth. He's got the Jewth. No, but Danny ages splendidly.
I hope I look that good when I'm that old.
I know, right? I mean, everyone in Game Grumps
actually, Taylor.
What?
Did I tell you that I went back to Adler Hall in order to talk to a professor the other day, mm-hmm. and one of my old professors, Engelbach, ran into me, and he looked at my peach fuzz and said, oh, there's your post-grad look.
Yeah.
I've been complimented on facial hair. Oh, my God.
I don't know if that's a compliment, Casey.
People have noticed my facial hair.
Oh, then... Truly, anything is possible. Anything.
Dude, this has been the best 2 weeks of my life.
Well, there you go.
I read Harry Potter. I got in a fist fight. Randy from Homeland Security wants to hook me up with a friend of his.
Okay.
I'm not even joking about most of these.
Hopefully not the fist fight.
Yeah, the fist fight didn't happen, to my knowledge. I don't know. I got pretty drunk on
that. To my knowledge. Even though I woke up with a fucking broken nose and I look like Owen Wilson.
Oh, no. I just woke up on top of the roof of the paper mill, and when I looked at my hand, my fingers had been sewn back onto my hand.
And it's all really bad because it's a paper mill.
I mean, on the plus side, at least they're sewn back on. I think I'm more relieved than I am concerned at this point.
So I'm pretty sure they accidentally put the pointer finger where my ring finger should be and vice versa. Oh, well.
Actually, that would explain some things, because a fun, weird fact about Casey's body. On my left hand, my ring finger is longer than my pointer finger, but on my right hand, my pointer finger is longer than my ring finger.
Interesting.
Here's a fun fact for you guys.
But, like, with your new re-sewn hand, like, your pinky is where your middle finger should be. So it's like...
The more you know!
Completely, like... It looks like a heart rate on a heart monitor. Just like all these hills and valleys and height. And it's super inconsistent. Beautiful. But
all right, so anything else you want to say about Community, Taylor Carla?
It is good. That's it.
Okay, it's good.
RIP Parks and Rec. Was last season 13 episodes? Yes, it was. Okay.
Yeah, they've been 13 since season 4 started.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it's good. Yahoo Screens is a really shitty service, but it's good.
Well, for you, but not for me. So I don't know.
I've never been able to get through an entire episode without having to refresh, pause, let it buffer, then let it refresh again, have an ad play at the same time as the show, and then have it freeze.
I wonder if it's a browser problem. Like, I don't know if you have to, like...
I tried on both Google Chrome and Firefox, and it didn't work in either very well.
I mean, it's worked fine for me. So, honestly, I don't know.
Also, apparently Patrick Brewster previously guest starred on series as a different character. Who was she?
I don't know. She's been in a lot of stuff. She is one prolific actress. She's been on everything from Modern Family to Community to Law and Order, Two and a Half Men. She was on Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, Criminal Minds.
Duck Dodgers.
Not Duck Dodgers. She was on Friends. So she's been around.
Yeah, like she's just one of those people who just made the rounds of sitcom guest star roles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She's basically just been like she had a list of... Oh, she was at Duck Dodgers. Yeah, that's right. You weren't wrong. I don't know why I said you were wrong. Did Whatever. You? She was also in Godzilla the series. So, Jesus Christ. She was on...
Stop telling me I'm wrong!
Wrong. I just like being, you know, Kevin Spacey from Superman Returns. Speaking of Kevin Spacey, we're going to talk about House of Cards, the 1993...
Thank you. I was hoping you'd...
What? I'm going to talk about House of Cards, the 1993 film starring Kathleen Turner and Tommy Lee Jones. Now on Netflix.
Okay.
All right, so following the death of her husband...
We're going to talk about season 3 of House of Cards. And, Taylor, would you like to sum up a little bit of what's happening in Season 3 of House Cards?
Well, okay. I guess we should say spoiler warning, whatever. Because we're going to, you know, not go episode by episode, but we're going to probably spoil some shit. But this follows Season 2, obviously, where last we saw Frank Underwood has become President of the United States of America. And now we pretty
Good
much...
For him.
Yeah, what's the phrase, like, in median res, where it's, like, in the middle of things, basically where we are?
Yep.
We're mm-hmm. in the middle of, you know, his tenure as president. I don't know how much later exactly, maybe a year or so? I don't know.
This season kicked off in early 2015, so probably around 6 months.
Okay, because a lot of time goes, and this is probably the first time, and I don't... completely know how much time was covered in each of the previous two seasons, but this season covers a lot, like basically a year. And
each season covers give or take a year.
Okay. I guess I just never
noticed.
Season
2 opened on February 12th and it debuted on February 14th.
You mean ended?
No.
Well, I know it debuted.
The season went... It debuted and ended on the same day.
Oh, okay. I get it. Okay. So I guess this is the first season where I really noticed a passage of time, since we've got stuff like elections and you have other stuff like I was utterly shocked to see that Doug Stamper is still alive, because I thought he was totally fucking dead at the end of season two. But, you know, his whole thing, it's a mixed bag, his storyline. There are parts that I actually genuinely enjoyed about it. I thought it was cool to have more of Michael Kelly to really do something, you know, stretch his acting legs, if you will. Well, because
I'm convinced that if it wasn't Michael Kelly as Douglas Stamper, they would have killed him off. The thing is, Michael Kelly is a really charismatic actor.
Yeah.
He's very good.
And this is so the first time, because a lot of this, there's a lot of things I noticed in this season where it deals a lot with vulnerability. Characters that we never thought were vulnerable are now vulnerable. And also kind of like tainted love. There's like a tainted love thing going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so than the other ones, because definitely, as you know, obviously the Underwoods are the focal point of most of pretty much all the three seasons, but this one, it's so much more emphasized and it's so much more about their marriage and their relationship. And I actually dug that. And I know you, before I even started watching the season, I came to you. I'm like, what do you think of the season? And you, I think you said it was odd, you know, like it felt weird. And
it's different. It is a very different season than the ones that led up to it.
It's a very different season. I know a lot of people don't like it as much as the other ones. I think I'll just get this out there. I probably like it overall better than season two. I think it's kind of going back to what you said about Community and comparing seasons. I think the highs of season two are better than the highs of season four or season three of House of Cards. But I think season three of House of Cards is overall a little bit better.
There's one really, really glaring problem I have with season two of House of Cards, and that's that halfway, like from the beginning of the season, you are now, okay, his plan is a presidency. We know that that's what he's going for. It's only a question of when he's going to get it, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be the last episode. So the tension is just not there for most of that season.
Well,
season, the tension's back.
Yeah. And I think with season two also for me personally is I found the story a little bit harder to follow because it dealt with, you know, relationship with China. We had Raymond Tusk's whole thing, and it's just like it kind of disengaged me. I wasn't super engaged with the season as much in that plot line. There was other plot lines that I was, you know, fairly into, whether it be Robin Wright's whole thing as Mrs. Underwood, and you know, and it's all worth it for the ending, you know, that last scene. That last episode is really good, well done too in season two, but it's like you said, there isn't a whole lot of tension.
At the same time, this season, with what you're talking about with hard to follow storylines, season two, I had a bigger problem with this season because the other seasons, the politics was a backdrop to me at any given moment. You could have told the story about a guy who's a band teacher out of middle school who gets promised a really good parking spot, but then another guy gets it. So he spends the rest of the school year overthrowing the entire school, you know, like body and structure.
Mm-hmm.
And side note, if it still starred Kevin Spacey, I would watch the fuck out of that.
I would watch anything with Kevin Spacey. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I would but that's the big thing with that, is that it's the backdrop there. Here, it's front and center. You need to care about stuff like not the Affordable Care Act,
America Works.
Like, you really need to care about America Works, and it's, I always have trouble caring about legislature that's fictional.
Yeah.
Like, something as dry as that, I really can't be compelled to fight for in a series or a movie. I can in real life, obviously. Otherwise, I'd be a robot. But it takes a lot for me to care about it when it's fiction. And that was a big uphill battle for me, is trying to care about a lot of the plots this season.
I mean, I guess I can see that. It's not that I cared. I wasn't like, oh my God, America Works, this is so captivating. But I did, I don't know, I guess it's just, you know, watching how Frank Underwood would react to it and how it would play into stuff, because obviously that leads to stuff with him going, what was it, FEMA, right? Where he pulls funds from FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the whole, like, little plot line about there's a hurricane coming and could devastate the Eastern Seaboard, but, and FEMA already doesn't have that much money in case of...
That was one of my favorite episodes, actually.
Yeah, and that's America Works plays into that, and America Works is just going to come in. The only I just saw America Works as a necessary end to bring, you know, to carry the story along, because that's how we get we get Mickey from Boardwalk Empire playing. I forget the actor's name, but Thomas Yates, the novelist, comes in. Mm-hmm. He's hired by Frank to write a book about America Works, but then that kind of grows out of control and it becomes much more than about America Works. It becomes about the marriage of the Underwoods. So, yeah, it's just, I think I see it more as just a thing to propel the story forward. That becomes his major platform. The fact that the idea is to get everyone employed. And I think part of it is it's trying to reflect our own culture and where we are, you know, with the whole unemployment thing, even though unemployment's at, like, I think a record low nowadays.
It's low for the last, like, decade or so.
Yeah. And there's a lot of – they keep bringing up stuff about the New Deal and all that kind of stuff, so – I don't know. I feel like I'm a bit in the minority with the season, in that I actually quite enjoyed it and I was pretty engaged. I love the stuff with Russia and the Russian prime minister. I thought he was a really cool side character and a nice foil to Frank Underwood and Kevin Spacey. I liked that a lot more focus was put on Claire Underwood. And that includes the whole subplot about, you have the gay rights activist, I forget what his name is, but he gets arrested and he's being held in Russia. And obviously that draws parallels from what was happening with Putin. I love that episode that ends with, Pussy Riot. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really clever take on it. And they have the some actual members of Pussy Riot show up, for the summit. So,
well, that was a good example of them using the politics to tell a character driven story.
Yeah.
And I think that this season wasn't nearly as good at doing that. But I also think that this season intentionally tried doing things that are different that didn't necessarily pay off. Like how the season starts, you open with a shot of Kevin Spacey pissing on a grave, which is amazing. But then the entire rest of the episode is entirely focused on Doug Stamper.
Mm-hmm.
And that tries people's patience, because you're not only going like, oh, wait, shit, this guy's alive. You're also going, oh, my God, get back to fucking Kevin Spacey.
I don't know. I don't know how to feel about him, because there are moments where.
Well, I think that a big part of the reason that we're not necessarily on board with him is because of the entire second half, is because he takes up the entire premiere and they were trying to go for something different. They were going for an unexpected premiere. And I think that if you literally took the footage from the first two episodes, put almost all the Doug Stamper scenes in the second episode and put almost all the Kevin Spacey scenes in the first episode, just re-edited those around, then you would have a much stronger premiere and the season would flow a lot more naturally.
Mm-hmm. I think bringing up the pissing on his dad's grave, there are a couple points in the first like six episodes where I kind of go, really, in, like, how unsubtle they are, you know, between that.
Well, it's like what?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, just between pissing on his dad's grave and then the scene where he's at the church with the Jesus statue and he spits on it. It's like, oh, my God, this is so Machiavellian. Jesus Christ. Even Richard III.
I thought Richard.
Yeah.
I was about to say the same thing. Richard III could be blatant, but God, this guy.
Yeah, it's like you could tell the playing Richard III in a new version of the play kind of felt like it kind of amped up Kevin Spacey a bit.
I'm starting to think Kevin Spacey in real life is determined to prove a villain.
He's just, yeah, because he's always known for playing villains, even though arguably my favorite role of him is as a, I guess, redemptive hero, but
he's you mean him in LA Confidential?
Yeah.
Well, that one, he's not a villain, but he's, of the three main cops, he's probably the sleaziest.
Yeah, but the whole movie, like, a lot of his whole arc is that he, you know, changes his way. Granted, it happens too late, you know, yeah. And that's part of, like, the sadness of his storyline, where it's like, no, he's turning a new leaf, but then, you know, he gets in too deep, man. He gets shot.
Rollo Tomasi.
But yeah, anyway, what else is there to talk about? You know, whenever we bring up Snoke Stamper, I just think of the last episode and what happens in the last episode and just how, like, nonchalant they are about the fate of Rachel, you know, the prostitute that they hired to basically sabotage Peter Russo's campaign the first season. That's still a thing, and I'm glad they're kind of done with it. You know,
yeah.
I enjoyed it. I liked the beginning of the final episode where, like, it's focusing on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. I actually like that, but I'm glad that they're done with it. It's like, it's done. Okay, cool. But just
that is not a plot line that should have made it three seasons.
Yeah. But I would almost say, like, I wish it happened sooner. Like, I still liked what happened at the end. I thought that was pretty quality stuff. It's just, again, it's the stuff in season two that I'm not crazy about. Because, and you don't need to drag out the stuff. You bring in, the McPoyle twin, whatever, brother. I forget that actor's name, but he's been in everything now. Mm-hmm. And how he is basically being, you know, blackmailed by Stamper to go find this girl, Rachel. And his whole plot line's just, to me, just kind of didn't amount to whole like it was a lot of time devoted to something that could be said in an episode, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he has to kind of make a new identity, he has to lie to this girl who was in a relationship with Rachel, so on and so forth. It just doesn't amount to a whole lot, and then he gets the shit beaten out of him by Stamper.
Well, this entire season, I felt like, was them stretching things out, because I'm not sure if I brought this up on mic, but do you know how this show got picked up?
Not really, but...
When Netflix picked up the show, they were looking at their things, and there were a lot of people who were rating David Fincher movies really high. They also have to be rating Kevin Spacey movies really high. So they said, okay, so people who like David Fincher, Kevin Spacey, and political stuff tend to all rate this really high, and there's enough of them that there might be a market if we can channel all three of them together. And they did that through adapting House of Cards, which when that idea was presented and they collaborated on that, it wasn't, okay, let's look at a pilot and judging on the strength of that, we'll order an entire season. Judging on strength of that, we'll order another season. It was just, okay, we have all this. We want 13 episodes and then another 13 episodes. So two seasons, 26 episodes, and by the end of those 26 episodes, you will be here. And that was what it was going to be. It wasn't going to be anything more than those two seasons. And then it was popular. And when it was popular, they ordered another season. So this season wasn't part of an original plan. And that's why a lot of the season can feel like an afterthought. That's why by the time you get to the end of season one, it's, oh my God, that was such a big change. End of season two, another really big change. End of season three, yeah, it's roughly where they were halfway through season three.
Yeah.
Like the last note of the season, so because, you know, we put that spoiler warning in. Okay, we put that spoiler warning in.
Yeah.
The last thing of the season is Claire saying she's going to leave Frank.
Yeah, they're basically separated by the end of the episode.
And the thing is, they were more or less there after the Russia incident halfway through the season. And then they tried to reconcile that, and then they went forward with it again. You could have done the season in those six episodes, probably.
Probably.
And, like, and I'm not one of those people who goes, like, oh, God, the show just stretches stuff out. Season one was in three episodes in the British version because they added a lot more. Douglas Stamper is pretty much not a thing in the British version. Claire is pretty much not a thing. And those are arguably two characters more interesting than Frank.
Yeah. Like, Frank's fun to watch, but he's not the deepest character.
Frank's fun to watch, but he's not as well written as Claire is.
Yeah. Well, there's...
And I would actually... Go ahead. I would dare say Robin Wright's probably doing as bad a good job as Claire as he is at Frank.
Oh, yeah. I would totally say... I would say if there was one person I thought should get a nomination for this season, if I had to pick one, it would be Robin Wright. Because I think mm-hmm. she did some great shit. And, you know... I do like some of the stuff that they do in regards to the relationship that I think is pretty clever, you know, just to kind of deal with her feeling trapped, you know. And they're not super subtle, but I love the ending where she's reading the book to the kids. And you're like, what do I do? What, like, you know, she's trying to placate to the children and having fun, but, like, you know that, like, that's what she's thinking to herself. And then you have another one where I forget the lines, but you know the scene where – because her job is basically to come out and introduce Frank on the campaign trail. And then there's one scene in particular where she does it. Frank comes out, you know, they kiss each other on the cheek, and she steps aside, and it zooms in on her. And you listen to what Frank's saying, and it's very relevant, and it almost feels like he's more of a voice in her head. And I thought that was pretty clever stuff.
Yeah, well, there's very clever filmmaking techniques being put into the show.
It was just storytelling techniques, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, the way they're telling the story isn't bad. I just think that they're not necessarily as focused as it could be. I think that things get muddled too much. I think that just reworking, shortening, and compressing, you could make a really great season with what you have. Mm-hmm. I just think that it took too long to get to a place that doesn't feel like as big an impact of here's where we land.
Yeah, I would be curious to see, like, if they did the 10-episode thing.
Or, heck, even the 6-episode thing.
Even I 6 episodes. Maybe. I mean...
Well, look at Boardwalk Empire Season 3, I think it is. The one that ends with Margaret Schroeder.
Margaret Schroeder.
It's when she's leaving Nucky Thompson.
Yeah.
That is roughly the same thing as where we are now. Like, the two mains who were love interests for the entirety of the run thus far, one of them is leaving the other. But so much different stuff, so much more stuff feels like it happens between them in that season than it does between Frank and Claire, even though Frank and Claire had more screen time than Margaret and Nucky had. So, and I think it just gets down to it never felt like they were retreading water in Boardwalk Empire. There was always something new going on. There was Nucky's love affair with the blonde woman who blows up. And I, like, that's saying, I'm only ever going to remember that shot of her smiling faintly at Nucky, and then her hair starts to brush and it lights up just for the fire.
Yep. Season 3 of that show is fucking amazing.
Yes.
Season 3 of Boardwalk Empire is fucking phenomenal. Arguably the best season of that show.
But, I think I'm not sure what I prefer between seasons 2 and 3, but they're both great.
They're both great. I think what I like about season 3 of Boardwalk Empire is that after season 2 and how it ends with Jimmy, I think a lot of people wrote off the show or just like, oh no, my favorite character's gone. What are they going to do now? And then they fucking come out with season 3 and it's just like fucking intense as shit. Bobby Cannavale nails it as, the villain. So it's all good.
But that season was a lot more of like, when they were asked, what are you going to do now? They answered very strongly. House Cards didn't. They answered adequately.
Yeah.
Like, the first two seasons, I would probably give, like, an A minus or B. And this one's probably a CC plus at most.
See, I'd probably say A minus for the first season, probably B minus for season 3, or season 2, and then probably a B for this season.
It had trouble holding my attention. And Like, the other seasons, it was just like, okay, even if these were having trouble, I can still go through all these. I've gone through both of them twice. This one, I'm not in any hurry to revisit. The only way I was able to get through it on a daily basis was I set myself up so I would wake up in the morning, I would have a cup of tea, and I would watch the episode, and that's how I got through it. And I would never try to watch more than one at once because I knew that that would just try my patience too much and I would tune out for the day. Until you got towards the end of the season, you got really interesting ones like the one with the hurricane approaching. That was a great fucking episode.
And the debate episode.
Yeah, and the debate episode. Like, the season ended very, very, very strongly.
Yeah, it's kind of not surprising that it's like the middle that's the one where it gets muddy.
Well, it's not just the middle. I think it starts off muddy because they tried something too radically different. I think that they should have just taken what they had from episodes 1 and 2, re-edited it so that the first episode is entirely Frank-focused. And then with the second episode, you can just open that one up on, holy shit, Stamper's alive. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
And I think that those two episodes would have been a lot stronger. I think that you probably could have compressed a good few episodes there into one, especially when you get to the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was them trying to fight the episode count they have and the number and the amount of time this is supposed to encompass. Because in order to make it line up with the election in 2016 for season 4, they had to have this episode and they had to have the season span a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... part of it is the nature of how things are run with the show, and part of it is how they chose to handle their own execution. But I think it's settled on a season that's notably weaker than the previous two, but still is worth watching once.
And I'm of a little bit differing opinion, but, you know.
Mine's more important.
Oh, shut up. See? There you go. I win.
Yeah!
I mean, what's that?
No, it's like saying, see, I win. I made a face at you.
I made a childish sound at you. I win.
Exactly.
I would basically just switch 2 and 3. I don't know. I was engaged, and there were some times where I legitimately went, oh shit, during this season, like out loud as I was watching it. Largely in the last episodes, you know, you had everything from Jackie Sharp instead of supporting and running with Frank, she runs with Heather Dunbar, who I thought that was an interesting little twist. What's that?
I am really looking forward to season 4 because that one's going to be full presidential debate stuff.
Yeah,
and that means that even though, you know, real life presidential campaigns can kind of be really annoying, this means that okay, you're going to get X amount of players. And they're all going to get this far, and they're going to all be going for the same thing. So it's essentially going to be a really sophisticated race.
Yeah. And really, like if they're looking for a place to end the show, they should probably end it at season 4. Because...
Well, my roommate is a big fan of the British version, and he said that apparently in that version, the Frank Underwood character is Prime Minister for 11 years.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing I'm wondering, because they're doing each season as 1 year, I'm not sure they can do this.
They're not going to do that.
But part of me wants to see, yeah, especially since we have a rule that the president, you cannot be president for more than 10 years or 2.5 terms, depending on.
Yeah, a lot of that's just the inherent differences between British democracy and American democracy, you know, and presidency and prime ministership.
And part of me is actually hoping that they do something radically different and that he ends up pulling a Nixon and Watchmen and going for a third term.
Yeah. Something like that.
Like that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. And like what I'm saying is do a time jump for 4 at the end of season 4 and then suddenly he's pulling that out of his ass and saying like, I'm going to run for a third term. I'm going to overthrow the Constitution, all that. Cause that could be when he becomes the tyrannical Frank Underwood. And as the tyrannical Frank Underwood, that can be his undoing. He got too greedy. He's trying so hard to be the legacy of Francis Underwood that then he become that can be its undoing.
Yeah.
Because that's what we need to be reaching for at this point. We have seen him reach the top and he just can't get any higher, and he needs to be pushed off the mountain.
Yeah,
that's the only way that this would be.
We're trying to get to the denouement of Frank Underwood's story here.
Yeah, like he's too strong, he's too powerful, that everything starts falling apart around him. And I'm not saying that he's going to die, because I was talking with some friends and they were saying that they think he's going to get assassinated. I don't think that's going to happen.
That would almost be like too good of a thing for Frank, well, you know Frank, what I mean?
Frank really deserves that, and that's why he's not going to get it.
Yeah, it's almost like, think of like a Michael Corleone thing, you know, what if he just died years later alone?
Yeah, that's how Michael Corleone deserved to die. He, like, even though all things say, like, oh, he should be shot and killed, and that's the end of the Corleone family empire. And, no, the one thing that makes Godfather Part 3 worth watching to me is the fact that that is how they end Michael Corleone's story, where he's an old man outside, no one's around him, and he slumps over dead, no one's there to even know that he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kind of sort of want to watch that scene on a loop right now for the entire length of Godfather Part 3, all 29 hours.
I don't know. I want to see the sexy, incestuous cousins nucky-making scene between...
Oh, God, I forgot about the sexy incest.
How can you forget about that? It's sexy incest.
Because usually I fall asleep by that point.
That's true. Especially when you're like me and you listen to the director's commentary and it was all about Francis Ford Coppola just talking about his family's gnocchi recipe. And it's like, shut up, Frankie. No one cares. Speaking of another Francis.
But this one did something far worse than lie and cheat his way to being president. He directed Jack.
Yep. Oh, man. But I don't know.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I'm wondering how while watching this whole season, and obviously it's been a big, you know, binge watching has become a thing. It's like a thing. It's part of our cultural lexicon at this point because of Netflix. And I'm almost wondering, like, how binge watching affects, obviously there's a difference between watching a show week after week, and basically all at once across 3 or so days. And I don't know, like, do you think House of Cards would work better, or would it work the same?
I don't think this season would work better. I think the other seasons, I think season one would work better if you watch it over the course of several days instead of several hours. I think season two would work better if you binge watch it. Because the thing is, and here's the reason I don't like binge watching that much. It's destroying the art of the episode. It's
That's what I was thinking. Like, because there is an art form to writing TV that I think a lot of people don't realize.
And it's like how, say, iTunes, now that iTunes is big, both the art of writing an album is not what it used to be. It's still there with stuff like Daft Punk, but it's less about the album, more about the songs now.
Well, that's how it's been since, you could argue, that's how it's been since the 80s with the advent of MTV, and how, what, you know, not every song in the album is going to get a music video. That's what the singles are. So the singles become more prominent, and that's kind of where we still are. So
well, we've been that way for a while. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I would say in the 1950s, it was like, okay, the album is just a collection of songs, and they can be pretty good songs. They could be a couple really good songs, and then a bunch of okay ones. You could have one good song in a sea of bad ones. Then you got the rivalry between the Beach Boys and Beatles, where each one was trying to one-up each other. And that's why within rapid succession of, I think, about a year and a half, you had Rubber Soul, Pet Sounds, and Revolver. And those were the three albums that was just like, okay, these aren't a series of songs. This is an album. This is a way where you can have almost a feeling of you just were told a story, even if they're not related subject matter-wise. Here is a series of songs, and by the end, you feel like you've gone on a journey. And if you change any of the order of these songs, it will affect experience of listening to the entire thing from start to finish. And especially back then when you only had vinyl, then you couldn't just, like, it was a lot harder to just skip a track like it is now. And that's why that's kind of gone away, especially since it started with when we got CDs and you could actually skip tracks. Mm-hmm. But now it's in full force because, like, okay, I don't need to buy the whole album. I can just buy the 3 or 4 songs I want and the other 8 I don't need. And that's what a lot of people do now because it's cheaper to buy 4 99-cent songs than it is to buy a $12.99 album. Uh-huh. And especially since you can pick and choose, okay, I don't need to listen to the whole thing. I got these 30-second clips. If I really want to hear the whole thing, I have YouTube. Yep. So that's where and that's kind of sort of what Netflix and HBO are doing because with Game of Thrones. With Game of Thrones and House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, like Netflix with their binge watching and HBO with how it's handling stuff like Game of Thrones. And I know I've said this on like many times, but Game of Thrones, the average episode, you can't actually name the A plot, the B plot, and the C plot.
Because it's just the plot.
Yeah. It's just the plot. And here is these characters. You haven't seen them since last week when they were doing this. And here is a further continuing adventures of them. And you likely will only see them once this episode. And if you're real lucky, the episode will be tied thematically, like what is a woman's place in Westeros or something like that. Yeah. And that's why I always really like it when you say have the Reigns of Casimir or the Purple Wedding episode where it's like, oh, this is focused entirely on this one thing.
Yeah, it almost is like the Lost approach, if you will, where it focuses on on one character instead of giving equal time to every character.
Yeah, season one, they tended to do a lot of, like, okay, this episode, they start here, and then they have to get here by the end of it. And then season two, because the storyline spread out so far away from each other, they couldn't really do that anymore. It's a necessary evil. And I'm okay with the way that Game of Thrones does it. I think it's great, but I want this to be the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
In Boardwalk Empire, there's an art to the episode. In Mad Men, there's really an art to the episode. Mm-hmm. And it's not really... And I'm afraid that that's going to die out as binge watching becomes a norm, because Game of Thrones is about the scenes of an episode.
That's one of the things that really like. And don't get me wrong, I think Game of Thrones is a really great show. I think it really is, and it deserves a lot of the praise that it gets. But it does bother me how it's like, except for the exceptions that you mentioned, like the Reigns of Castamere and the Purple Wedding episode, people don't remember episodes of Game of Thrones. You can't be like, oh, yeah,
even in those episodes, they remember scenes.
Yeah. People always remember how
the Purple Wedding ended.
You can't be like, this is, I don't know, give me a good episode of Breaking Bad. Because that's how you remember Breaking Bad.
Ozymandias.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Ozymandias, I don't remember the shot of Marie crying or Walt pushing his barrel across the desert. I do remember those things. I remember how that was the episode where everything fell apart for Walt, and then he tried to keep it together, but wasn't able to, and he had to leave his family.
Or what about Crawl Space in season 4, or Face Off, the finale of season 4?
Yeah, and those are episodes where it's like, okay, this is telling a story. Here is the beginning of their conflict, and it might not get entirely resolved, but something will be resolved. Even something that's so continuity-based. Look at Lost. Mm-hmm. Every episode of Lost, well, I would say all but 5 episodes of Lost are you have a setup, and by the end of this episode, the characters will have gotten to X spot. It might not be where they want to get to, but it is the end of a segment of story. It might not be the end of a novel, but it's the end of a chapter. In one episode, it might be that we are reminded, hey, why is Locke in that wheelchair? And by the end of the episode, we will be told why Locke was in that wheelchair. And on the island, he'll have left the castaways and joined the others. By the beginning of an episode, we might learn that Locke has recruited Sawyer to help him do something. And by the end of the episode, Sawyer will have killed Locke's dad. Or Charlie will be told he's going to die, and then he'll come to terms with the fact that he'll die. Mm-hmm. And it's all set up and payoff. That's how stories work. Lost, I think, did a really great job of both having something that's so continuity-based and so much of one long story, but also having each episode give you something satisfying. Uh-huh. And I feel like Game of Thrones is the only time it's ever worked in the way they're doing it. I hope that this does not become the norm, but I fear that it will.
Yeah.
Because if I watched House of Cards Season 3 week to week, I don't think I would have gotten past the Renewal of Vows episode.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, again, that's the thing. I think about, okay, like, for instance, what about that scene in Game of Thrones where, you know, Daenerys is basically lets her dragons loose and kills everybody in that kingdom? Mm-hmm. What are the other, what other storylines go on in that? What else happens in that episode? You can't really say, you know, it... And that's just kind of, I don't know, it's not like it really...
No, Game of Thrones is about scenes, it's not about episodes. So.
And I think that just bugs me a little bit about it. It's like... Right?
Don't worry, Taylor, it bugs me too.
Okay, because, I don't know, and... I don't know. It's like, you can't be like with Mad Men, you have, like, the suitcase. Like, Smoke on the Water. Or not Smoke on the Water, or the, what's the Gypsy?
Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, and Gypsy, was it Gypsy and the Hobo?
That's Gypsy episode. And the Hobo, which, have I ever told you my experience watching the episode?
Yeah, you did. Yep.
At the very end, it's like, oh, so there's a Gypsy and a Hobo, and then he asks Don, where are you supposed to be? And it's like, you know, Don did steal an identity, and then I started thinking, Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's just, I don't know. It, definitely watching it, there was part of me that had to keep telling myself, like, don't watch it all at once. It might feel better not watching it all at once. And I try not to watch it, like, in 2 days. I think that's fucking ridiculous. Because then so much shit happens all at once, you know, that I can't, I can't comprehend all of it, if you will. If I watched any season of House of Cards in 2 days, I think I watched it over a week. But plus there's something great about that anticipation. You know, if you can write a great cliffhanger, you know, it's kind of wasted when you can just go to the next episode, you know?
Yeah.
And again, well, going back to Breaking Bad, think of Crawl Space where it ends with, you know, Walter White on his back, you know, slow zoom out as he basically like loses his mind out of stress and fear of his family being killed by Gus. And then you can just literally just go to it the next minute. And it's like, oh, well you lose a lot of that. Or what was it? Half Measures that ends with, Walt. Yeah. Where Jesse has his gun, he's about to kill the dealers. Well, Walt fucking drives in and mows them down with his car, kills mm-hmm. one of them who's still alive, and just zoom in on Walt, run, bam. That is emphasized by a week in between to Full Measures.
Mm-hmm.
It just is.
Look at when you're watching Lost.
Yeah, it's like Lost, you know? Imagine if you were binge watching Lost, and it's
I did the first 4 seasons.
And you did. What season was it where it's like, Kate, we have to go back?
End of season 3.
So did it affect it at all going right into season 4?
Yeah, it did because that wasn't nearly as big an impact. Also, I had that part spoiled for me.
Oh, you had that part spoiled for you?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just remember, I think a lot of...
Well, that's the other thing is that my favorite season of Lost is season 4. I did not like watching it the first time I watched it. Just because I was experiencing so much fatigue with the show at that point. I get fatigue through binge watching more than a season.
Yeah.
And I think that it makes it a lot more difficult to actually judge a show on its own quality when you are binge watching for that long. And it all starts to blur together and it's harder to actually just like let it be what it is mm-hmm. with how we view shows now.
Yeah.
God, we're sounding like those old men who complain about modern-day kid music.
No school like the old school. We're like fucking the two old guys that showed up in all of Brad Bird's movies before they die. Ollie Johnson and Frank Thomas, I think is his name. Yeah, they're from the, what, Nine Old Men from Disney. And they cameoed, and that's at the end of The Incredibles. No school like the old school. That's us. It's you and me, Casey. As we look
what
at, like,
have we become?
As people, like, binge
when
watch House
get
of
more
Cards.
Garth Marenghi's... When will we have more Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
No school like it. Like that. Then I'm just saying it ad nauseum. But, yeah.
Old school like old school. Is there anything else you want to talk about, though?
Not really.
Just got ascended to old man voices.
Like I said, I respectfully disagree a tiny bit about House of Cards Season 3. I do like it a little more than 2. I do enjoy it. I didn't really get to spoil this part, but this fucking... The fate of Rachel. Like, just how they handled it was kind of beautiful. It really was. Where Stamper seems to have a change of heart, because otherwise he's going to, like, murder her and bury her. And, you know, she's pleading for her life, and he seems to have changed his heart. And then, you know, lets her go. She's walking down the street, and he's driving the other way. And then he just stops, and he looks around, turns around, and then you just see, like, you know, she's walking, she stops, she hears the car, looks around, and it just cuts to him burying her. And it's like, oh my god! Good one, House of Cards. Good on you. That's efficient storytelling. Right fucking there. I mean, it's awful, but damn. Kudos.
Well, I think that about wraps up for this week.
Yeah, and I guess we're not totally sure yet about where we're going to go from here, since, you know, Casey's not in college anymore, and calling ourselves Geeks of College is, you know, a bit of a false advert. What's it?
Yeah, we're starting to sound like the, now we're starting like the old people who try to get into what the kids are listening to these days.
Yeah. So keep listening, keep updated, keep looking at our Facebook page. We've got some plans and for the future of the show. We're not done yet by a long shot, hopefully. So
we'll be going into our early 80s.
Yeah, totally. When, like, audio is just shot right into your fucking cranium by, like, a laser. Like, you don't even experience stuff. You're just, like, in a bed, and, like, they shoot stuff at your brain, and you experience it like that. Everything. Everything
and yet,
is that way.
When we're all old and widowed, we'll still be saying,
keep studying.
Actually, are we gonna keep saying that? Because
not really. I mean,
no one's in college.
Yeah, no one's in college, so I guess we're not really keep studying. So whatever.
We'll come up with something later.